This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The U.S. Africa Business Week. It's going to be an event that, in a significant move, is helping to continue to enhance export and import trade relations between the United States and Africa.
That was Gbenge Omotayo, Executive Director for the U.S.-Africa Trade and Business Network. Details coming up. Also, South Sudan has extended the transitional government of national unity for another 2 years. And the FBI is investigating the second apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story this morning. The man suspected of planning to shoot former U.S. President Donald Trump appeared in court in the U.S. state of Florida. Ryan Wesley Rhodes was captured Sunday and appeared in a federal court in West Palm Beach. Trump is safe after what officials say was the second unsuccessful assassination attempt in 2 months. The FBI took the lead after Sunday's shooting with the suspect in custody, and with Americans facing another dramatic event in what is already a high-stakes, high-drama election. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
For the second time in 9 weeks, former President Donald Trump walked away from a would-be assassination. The latest on Sunday afternoon at his golf club in West Palm Beach, Florida, the FBI said. Unlike the previous attempt, this one did not happen on live television, like the dramatic shooting Trump survived on July 13th. That attempt wounded Trump in the ear and killed a rally attendee behind him. Days later, Trump accepted the Republican Party's presidential nomination. Officials on Sunday said Trump was not hurt.
Former President Donald Trump is safe and unharmed.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is leading the investigation, says it appears to be an attempted assassination. The local sheriff said the suspect fled, leaving behind an AK-47-style rifle with a scope, a GoPro camera, and 2 backpacks. Police later caught him as he sped along the main highway into a neighboring county. Sheriff Rick Bradshaw leads the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office.
The Secret Service agent that was on the course did a fantastic job. What they do is they have an agent that jumps one hole ahead of time to where the president was at. And he was able to spot this rifle barrel sticking out of the fence and immediately engage that individual, at which time the individual took off.
In a joint statement less than an hour after the Trump campaign announced this second attempt on Trump's life, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris said they were being regularly briefed and said they are relieved that Trump is safe. The sheriff said that the suspect was between 300 and 500 yards, about 275 to 460 meters from Trump, hiding in shrubbery. And as Monday dawns and questions swirl in America about how this will add further uncertainty in an already tumultuous election, those simple numbers underscore a terrifying fact. That a shooter managed to get so close to Trump, comfortably within the range of an AK-47-style rifle, about 275 meters. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
As we just reported, there was a second apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump at his Florida golf club on Sunday. Ryan Wesley Roth was captured a short time later. Are U.S. presidential contenders safe on the campaign trail? VOA's Carol Van Dam put that question to political scientist Nola Haynes from Georgetown University School of Foreign Service.
That's a great question. And, you know, this has been an ongoing conversation with a lot of foreign partners about the U.S. and our gun problems, you know, especially in certain states where gun laws are more relaxed. And this is definitely one of those outcomes of this occurring in a state where gun laws are relaxed. And when you're talking about the United States of America, which is the beacon of progress and hope around the country, the one issue that, you know, foreign friends, foreign colleagues are completely baffled by is our gun laws. And it's completely understandable because it goes against everything that progress says that it wants to move toward, and yet we are still stuck in this really violent time due to very kind of gun laws that depend on, you know, different states and how they decide they want their gun laws to look in each state.
What do you think the impact of this apparent second attempt on Trump's life have on his campaign in particular?
Well, the first assassination attempt, it was all over the news, and people were very concerned about a sympathy vote. Depending on what side you land on, you know, the Democrats were concerned that this would give former President Donald Trump a bump, and then the Republicans were hoping that it gave former President Donald Trump a bump. What wound up happening is the President of the United States decided not to rerun and quickly supported and endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris. And then it seemed as if the conversation just completely disappeared, especially because it seemed that President Trump's ear had healed, that there was no wound.
But do you think that going forward now with just the, like 50 days left or less until the election day, that when he does these big public rallies, that things are going to change? It's going to look different?
Well, if anything, perhaps there will be more Secret Service. Maybe a popular talking point will be if former President Trump were the president again, he would have more Secret Service. So perhaps that will be a talking point that they will lean into, which is kind of signaling, you know, to the base, perhaps to the base that was going to stay home and not necessarily vote. You know, keep in mind that former President Donald Trump is a populist. He's not necessarily interested in widening the tent per se. It's more about perhaps getting his supporters aren't necessarily voters, to get those supporters that maybe weren't going to vote to now be voters.
President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris have issued statements condemning the political violence. What else needs to be done?
They're doing the right things. I mean, they're talking to the Secret Service. You know, the FBI is involved. Chuck Schumer was briefed. They're briefed. They're staying on top of the situation. And President Biden has said that there needs to be more Secret Service, that the Secret Service needs help, you know, that this perhaps is a workforce issue. And I know across the national security apparatus, there is a workforce issue. So it's looking as if the Secret Service is one of those areas.
That is Nola Haynes from Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. She spoke to VOA's Carol Van Dam in Washington. As reported, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris have both condemned the incident and said they are glad Trump was not harmed. Today, the acting head of the Secret Service, the force that protects U.S. presidents, former presidents, and other top officials, will meet with Trump in Florida. The U.S.-Africa Business Week in New York brings together African and U.S. leaders to enhance trade and investment, aligned with the United Nations General Assembly. This event, which starts today, aims to unite African policymakers and business leaders in advancing the continent's development. With a focus on local initiatives, the goal is to empower U.S. and African entrepreneurs to build international support for doing business across the United States and Africa. VOA's Pauline Diho interviewed Gibenga Omatayo, the executive director of the U.S. Trade and Business Network, to learn more.
The U.S.-Africa Business Week, it's going to be an event that, in a significant move, is helping to continue to enhance export and import trade relations between the United States and Africa during the United Nations General Assembly to host world leaders and to host diplomats, to host captains of industries and the African diaspora. This platform is needed for so long, but we took the bull by the horn and we're bringing together the resources that Africa needs to meet up with those opportunities that are lying all over the continent. And so the U.S.-Africa Business Week is an event that facilitates trade and investment opportunity. It's actually the only B2B and B2G event that started in 2019.
From talking to people, some of those are business people that you've had the privilege of interacting with, when you talk to them, what kind of investments are they looking for from the diaspora here, or even the Americans themselves? they talk about looking for opportunities in Africa, but in some cases they don't know what opportunities are there. What are we talking about?
The opportunity is immense on both sides. I need to tell you that we're not just talking about goods here. We're also talking about human resources. What we are doing, our campaign is saying, and that's what the mayor of New York connects with us on, that we should be allowed to meet directly with the buyers and sell our resources, our commodities, so without people being the middlemen and taking all the profits from us. So there is a lot of opportunities like that, and that's why we continue to educate people. For example, there is a push in Africa for non-oil exports. Virtually all the countries are campaigning for non-oil exports and adding value to products and goods. And they said that because they know that rather than sending raw materials, if they had value, they create jobs, right? They sell at higher price. And then they also earn in foreign exchange, right? But the challenge has been that there's no access to markets. They don't know how. And that's why we continue to educate in terms of how do you meet compliance? How do you package products to meet with Food and Drug Administration guidelines? How do you create a nutritional label? How do you get product to Walmart, Costco, and places like that? We need to understand, what does the market want? What are the requirements? Who are the buyers? How do we reach them? How do we bring them together? So for me, it's a journey of passion. And that's why we focus on continuing to educate them, to empower them, so that their products can have places here and not just seeds in the local African markets that, you know, majorly is unregulated and the larger market don't patronize.
That was Gbenge Omotayo, Executive Director, U.S. Africa Trade and Business Network, speaking with VOA's Pauline Dio. You were listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehyes Wahib in Washington, and would love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202-258-3076. +1 202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. The signatories of South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement have extended the transitional government of national unity for another 2 years. Martin Elia Lumoro is Minister of Cabinet Affairs and the Secretary of the Committee monitoring the implementation matrix for the peace agreement. He announced Friday that the institutions implementing the agreement cited security and logistical challenges as obstacles to holding elections. Lomoro says the National Electoral Commission, Joint Security Board, and other institutions suggested December 22nd is not the best date for elections.
They did not complete all the tasks that are critical for the conduct of elections in December 2024. Two, they needed us to approve extension to postpone elections and to extend the transition period as a result of postponement.
President Salva Kiir, his five deputies, and the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement did not dispute the recommendations of the committee monitoring the peace deal implementation matrix. Lamour says Kiir's deputies are in favor of pushing the election to 2026.
And the presidency have endorsed that elections be postponed or delayed according to the recommendations of the security sector institutions and the elections-related institutions.
In March 2022, when the transitional period was extended until the end of this year, First Vice President Riek Machar had this to say.
The concern was, if we extend, how do we sell it to South Sudanese? Because some people think extension is just for sake of being in power. But what choice do you have if you don't extend? If you don't extend, you go to square one. And we all know what the square one is.
Lomuro says the transitional government of national unity will work hard during coming years to prepare the country for elections.
Two, as a result of this endorsement of postponement, we have agreed to reset the transitional period to begin from February 2025 to 2026, with the elections being conducted in 22nd of December 2026.
News of the extension brought mixed public reaction. Some government critics have called it a plan by Kiir to stay in power. Holdout rebel groups and civil society members negotiating with the South Sudan government in Nairobi have not issued statements. The French medical aid agency Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is calling for airdrops of food and other emergency supplies into North Darfur's Zamzam camp because the situation has become so catastrophic and military forces are blocking roads. MSF Chief Executive Officer Avriel Binot tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that the group issued the call after conducting nutrition screenings at the camp.
Airdrops are never the ideal situation. You've got all kinds of risk of whatever is dropped, if it's food, not necessarily reaching those who are most acutely in need. There is always a risk of people on the ground not managing it properly. Anything can happen. It can be very unpredictable. At this point, though, the catastrophic situation is so horrific that we have to do something to work around what are absolutely impenetrable, it seems, barriers to being able to bring in the aid necessary, particularly the therapeutic foods that we need to be able to treat all these thousands of malnourished children. We have more than 29,000 children under 5 years old screened last week during a vaccination campaign in the camp, in Zamzam camp near El Fasher, that were suffering from severe acute malnutrition. I mean, the numbers are off the charts. It's well beyond any threshold that we have seen thus far in Sudan.
How do you even stop the RSF from grabbing those supplies once they drop and fall on the ground? If they're, you know, taking charge so much and intimidating people that are still there, how do you stop that from happening?
Well, obviously, it all is going to have to rely upon a lot of negotiation. A lot of people on the ground can be trusted, including colleagues of Doctors Without Borders, other aid workers that are going to do their best with the situation at hand. We have to negotiate for whatever is dropping in proximity or into the camp, on top of the camp, to be able to be managed in an appropriate way.
In this Zamzam camp, are people already dying there, children, other vulnerable people?
Yes, without a doubt. And, you know, the mass screenings that we've done would certainly indicate that many, many more will die. We are critically low on therapeutic foods to treat the malnourished children. There's no time to waste. These are preventable deaths to be avoided. And much as we've seen in other parts of the country, when you have warring parties that are just not facilitating the humanitarian aid coming through, who are creating all kinds of barriers, whether it's RSF or the SAF around Khartoum, we are seeing that the urgent needs that people have are not being met.
This is one of the most expensive ways to try to reach people. Do you have the funding to do this?
Well, the funding, I think, is there. The ability to really scale up commensurate with the needs is not because of these impediments. And if it's not security impediments in terms of the risks that aid agencies have to calculate whether it makes sense to continue programming, if it's not actual direct threats of being caught up in fighting or in the wrong place at the wrong time. We have tremendous administrative barriers in Sudan from the RSF, the SAF, the government. It's been very, very difficult, even with aid organizations, the UN and donor governments willing to pledge to do more for Sudan. We are, as Doctors Without Borders or MSF, one of the only organizations that has maintained a presence around the country. But there are certain places like Al Fasher where we just have not been able to because of all the fighting that was going on. We had to suspend our activities there and very much look forward to resuming those activities.
That was MSF CEO Avril Bineau. She was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Damme from Toronto, Canada. And now, time for our sports roundup. I have in studio VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro. Thank you, and welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehez.
So, the English Premier League has some unexpected results this past weekend. Give us the lowdown.
Absolutely, Yehez. If we're just going to start off with Manchester United versus Southampton, they were able to win decisively 3-0. It's almost as if the Red Devils are catching back in stride after their defeat, having lost to Liverpool and starting off the season relatively shaky. Seems like they might have caught their footing. Interestingly enough, the team really didn't look that strong going into this game. The very beginning of the game, Southampton was really, you know, dominating them, showing really Manchester United how it is that they were really coming after them in every aspect of it. A penalty kick was given to Southampton. Their goalkeeper, Onana, was able to save the PK. And from there, it kind of changed things. Within a few minutes, their first goal was scored. Another 6 minutes, second goal was scored. Wow. It was as if it was literally, you know, it kind of gave them life again. So very interesting to see them come back from that. But that's the beauty of the Premier League. In some not so happy news for some of our Liverpool fans, they lost to Nottingham Forest. Forest is a team that basically almost got relegated last year, but with their nails held on to making sure that they had that 17th spot and did not get relegated. And they're showing a completely different side this year. Within the first four games of the season, they have not lost yet. They've won two games and two draws. We'll see how long they can keep this going. They are coached very well. They might not have the best talent, but really a result like this is going to help them and boost their morale moving forward. Manchester City still on form, as we see, have not lost a single game this season already. They went down 1-0 to Brentford, but were able to score two goals after that 2-1 win. And then Arsenal versus Tottenham. I would say Arsenal, without two of their key players, Martin Odegaard and Declan Rice, being out. One is out due to injury. The other one is out due to a red card given in a previous game. So he had a suspension. Still, somehow made it work. We're able to score and win 1-0 against a rival in a North London derby. So very, very big news for Arsenal to be able to, you know, keep a clean sheet against a North London rival.
And Mokbil, the WNBA is about to enter the playoffs this upcoming weekend. Any predictions for the team that might win?
Yeah, so if we're looking at it, some of the predictions look like the hottest team in the second half has been the Minnesota Lynx. They have clinched the second position at the moment. They have won 28 games and lost only 9. The only other team that has a better record than them going into this playoffs would be the New York Liberty with 31 wins and 6 losses. But the stories are still the two rookies, right? Where we're looking at Indiana Fever's Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. They have clinched. This is the first team that has clinched the playoffs after being almost the worst team in the league last year. They were able to get the first round pick with Caitlin Clark. And the Chicago Sky with Angel Reese are also in that playoff contention in that 9th spot right now. If they win one or two more of their games before Sunday, they'll also be in the playoffs. It will be exciting to see both of them in action.
VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tian Wong, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.